Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Chris Gibson, as we sit here today, there's an article appearing in most of our major publications that say the sort of infrastructure of the Republican Party are trying to convince the third Bush, Jeb Bush, to run for president of the United States. What do you make of that?
I haven't read it. I wouldn't say I'm an expert at Jeb Bush, but from what I do know, I think he's been a thoughtful leader from his time in Florida and somebody who can bring people together. That's the type of leadership. I'm not certainly endorsing Jeb Bush today. I'm just saying that as we look towards 2016, I think that we need to have a leader who can inspire, can bring people together, that can help grow this economy, get us back to a balanced budget over time, and protect this exceptional way of life, not only from threats from abroad, but also from encroachment here at home, uniting us in celebration and in protection of our Bill of Rights. So, you know, the fact that somebody like Jeb Bush is getting some traction, I find encouraging to the extent that there are others out there that I don't think that are embracing that type of inclusive message. So let me just say this more broadly, that it strikes me that this is a moment in our country's history where we could actually learn from Abraham Lincoln and actually an intersection between Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. Here's why. You know, I think it was the 7th of April of 1865 when General Grant wired up to the president. And he said, and you can imagine what it was like to receive this telegram after over 4 years of war. He said that General Lee is going to surrender. What are your instructions? And at the time of receiving that, you had what was described as a radical Republican Congress. They wanted retribution.
Revenge.
They wanted revenge for the Civil War. And there had been so much loss of life. Lincoln's instruction, he wired back, he said, let him up easy. It was always about the Union. It was always about the country. And I say that now because there are those that analysts that believe that Republicans are going to win the Senate. And then there's discussion about what that means for the polity, what that means for policy. Let me elaborate a little further. John F. Kennedy comes to the fore. It's a change of generations. It's one of these moments the American people are glued to the television to hear what he has to say on that brisk morning. And he says, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And I think at the nexus of these two leaders is really, I think, the inspiration and the approach that we need to take going forward. We need a selfless leader. We need a leader that'll come forward and will inspire us to, as a country, to rally together. And I think that's what Lincoln did. He resisted the political forces. And you can imagine how strong they must have been. After all, it was his own party. How strong it was to try to take a retribution policy towards the South. That is not the direction he wanted to take. And then you had Kennedy hearkening us, really bringing us together, and the idea that what we're about ready to embark upon is something that we have to keep the long view in perspective, and that we're thinking about our children and grandchildren. I'll tell you that for me, what that means, the inspiration for me is only a few days after I retired from the Army. And I was laying in bed one night with Mary Jo, and I said to her, I said, we're going to have to give back our pension. And my wife is a saint. I think she's been on this show. She's a licensed clinical social worker. She loves people. But, boy, I learned an issue. I learned something about timing that night. I mean, my wife she's also a Girardi. And she,
What were you going to give back your pension?
Well, and I have. But my point, when I first mentioned this to my wife.
Because you're a congressperson.
Yeah, because I didn't want to double dip. Because in these times, I knew I was going to have to make hard calls that were for the benefit of all.
So she said no.
Well, she did. She was very upset that first night that I brought it up. And I said at that point, probably one of the wisest things, I said, you know what, let's just sleep on it. Let's just think on it and think on it. And in the morning, she came around and she said, I see what you're doing here. And I'll support you. And the point was this. I mean, the point she was making the night before is, look, you've earned this. You've been in the military for 29 years. You went to war. We have kids. You know, they're going to need investments. We have college to pay for, all of this. And I said, if I'm going to take on this responsibility of leadership, I'm going to be expected to make some hard calls if we're going to get this right. And we have to lead by example. We have to be the first ones to say that we're going to give this money back. and we're not going to double dip. And this is what I'm saying right now what the country needs. The country needs this nexus between Lincoln, which is about the Union, which is about us as a people, and then we need selfless leaders that will say in these hard times, as we make hard calls, that president, him or her, whoever it may be, has to lead by example first. That's what will rally us, because there are people who say now that we can't come together. I don't believe that for anything in the world. I think we have so much more in common than we ever have apart, and that it is the inclination at the moment to everybody, whenever we talk about hard calls, everybody goes to the corner and says, I'm going to protect what I got. Mm-hmm. But I think if we have imaginative leadership that inspires us, I think that we'll stop that. And I think we will come together. We do this in time of after storms. Think about how well we come together and how selfless we are when we have neighbors in need.
What about immigration?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you know, many people in your party really don't want to have, you know, a comprehensive path to citizenship, immigration reform. Where are you on this?
Well, we have a broken system. There isn't any doubt. And as I move all about the 165 towns, the 11 counties, and the 19th congressional district, I don't find any pushback to that. It's evident in our supply and demand dynamic in the labor market. It's evident in how long it takes to naturalize citizens, in some cases up to 9 years. And it's evident in the fact that half the people who came here or half the people who are here illegally now actually came here legally. So there's a major issue when it comes to efficacy in the system. Now, the challenge is this. We are at once. We are a nation of immigrants. We are also a nation of laws, and we have to find a way to reconcile the two. I think the principles that our party has put forward are thoughtful. I do support them. And I think that that's a framework going forward. And we're talking about efficacy first in the system. Some quickly move to the southern border. Well, sure, that's an issue, but so is the northern border, and so are the ports, number one. And then the issue has to do with this visa system that we have, we're not able to track it and effectively implement it. There are issues with how long it takes to become a citizen. I think that we can address all of these pieces, and E-Verify will play a role in that. I also think that federalism will play a role in that, and that ultimately when we can bring forward a system that we can enforce, then you can't just stop there. You have to deal with the situation of those that are here illegally undocumented now. And look, we are a nation of laws. There have to be consequences.
But let me interrupt you for a second, Chris, and say that Speaker Boehner has said he wanted us to move on this, and then under great pressure from some of your more radical colleagues said nothing doing this year. What's that about?
Well, I was there the day that all this occurred, and I will tell you this, that a good number of the folks who went to the mic that expressed their displeasure were actually waving the piece of paper. And they said, look, I don't have a problem with these principles. They don't trust the president, because with the health care law, the president has changed it untold number of times. And in some cases, when the bipartisan Congress was willing to change the law to give him the framework to actually implement some of these changes. So there's really a mistrust that the president's going to enforce any law. Now, what I would argue is this. Look, we're going to have to tackle this. And I was getting to the point just before you made that point. I was saying that we're going to have to address the situation. Once we have an efficacious system, you know, we're going to have to address the 11 million or so that are here undocumented now. And I think there has to be consequences. Unfortunately, I don't think anybody's pushing back on that. There have to be, you know, consequences. Individuals come forward, they plead guilty to being here outside the rule of law, and there have to be consequences to that. People have talked about, you know, back taxes that would be paid, a background check, perhaps learn English, and then they would get legalization. So they'd be able to come out of the shadows. I think that that can be part of this for sure. It can be part of this. So, and I do think that the political calculus will be that it doesn't get easier over time. It gets harder. So we need to work together. I do think that over time, in the next 6 to 8 months or so, maybe as long as a year, but I do think we're going to tackle this issue.
Only a half a minute, but progressives like yourself in the Republican Party reminding me a little of T.R.
I would say pragmatic.
Though. Okay.
I mean,
yeah, but
I mean, labels are a problem,
okay,
I think,
fine,
in politics.
Fine, you're right. You're right. Okay, but people, the Teddy Roosevelts of the world and stuff, who we're out of time, but do you go to the speaker and say, hey, you can't let these other beliefs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm engaged with the leadership often. In fact, I'll be with Leader Cantor this week. I've been with the speaker. I see him on the floor. I have conversations with him just about every week. he understands. He's actually, you know, he gets this practical piece. He's trying to work politics as well. But here's the larger point. As a country, regardless of what party you may be in, we're all Americans first. This has to be dealt with, among other issues. I want to see us unite. I want to see us grow this economy so every American gets a shot at the American dream, that we balance now requirements with future requirements, get back to a balanced budget over time, and protect this exceptional way of life. That is something we can all agree upon and unite behind.
Chris Gibson, as always, a huge thank you for coming to our studios, for sitting here and talking to us about all this. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Alan, and God bless all the listeners out there.